everybody, welcome to the fifth episode of the STA podcast. We are audio only again, and because Juhana's webcam is horrible. Today we are with Enrique again that joined us, and we are going to speak about nerdy stuff. So, yeah. Yes, but we should totally show them the webcam next time because it's really funny. But you can have the webcam show your beautiful eyes. Only the eyes. So people don't know. It takes 1 month to see the all your face. First it's just the forehead and the eyes and the mouth. Yeah, that's the old problem probably. We know that that's not the truth, but...
So the camera is creating you some complex. That's not it.
So, Enrique, you do simulation in your life. So, tell us about what you do in your job. And since Juhana also is kind of doing similar-ish things, yeah? So, we might have a good discussion about that, and then I can put the experimentalist point of view over there.
Unrelevant point of view.
Yeah, tell our experiments are the only thing that matters.
Yeah, whatever. Good luck publishing your experiments.
Oh, come on, I'm depressed already, though. I'll make it worse. Oh, yeah, that's true, yeah. I have that going for me. I love this already. Okay, so Enrique, tell us about your job.
So you wanted to say a lot of boring thing about simulations? For those who had not listened to the podcast last week, no, 2 weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I think 2 weeks ago.
It was a 3.5.
So basically, I do computer simulations, atomistic, which means that, well, we simulate atom by atom, so it's quite small simulation samples, let's say, of a few million atoms. And yeah, and we see what happens, and normally we study some phenomena which happens in really small scale, so nanometer scale, which is around 1,000 times smaller than a cell, a human cell. Mm-hmm. And we study several phenomena which, for example, irradiation. It's one of the topics which I'm studying. How does how do materials degrade under irradiation?
So you shoot stuff to the simulated material and see what happens.
Yeah, my job is not really constructive. It's mainly destructive. It's
that's the fun, no?
Blowing up materials really small scale and all inside a computer. So
yeah,
pretty much what I do.
Inside a computer.
Yes, a lot of blood. You mean
atomic blood? Oh, yeah.
But actually, you know, like some guy who was in our lab, he was doing with Blender, you know, Blender?
Yeah.
And for
3D visualization tool.
Yeah, for rendering. Like quite professional, what almost professionals use when they want to do 3D animation. And he was doing like these animations with Blender, and he was making the atoms as crystal spheres. So, let's say spheres which reflect really kind of really well polished. And then it was really, really, really cool. You could see the reflection of one atom another atom surface and so on. It was really interesting. And he was doing also this explosion kind of when you throw the atom, because pretty much what happens, you kind of create huge mess and the atoms fly away.
That looks cool.
Yeah, it's true. Well, I'm sure you would have we could find a place for you in our lab as a slave for producing nice animations for us.
Yeah.
For free, you said, isn't it? Yeah. Neither we are, Johanna. It's fine.
Yeah, you don't need to be the best physicist to animate Kulta stuff.
Yeah, but we have quite, I personally have, because yeah, I do everything, basically I just throw ions with tons of energy and they just pretty much give it to all the atoms nearby it and then produce huge mess. And then I have some quite interesting animations which actually rendered maybe, I mean, they're already quite impressive with the really basic rendering we use, but they're quite cool. Like, for example, I have one animation where, well, this is a PD that I'm going to show but here, but there is like a graphene layer, which is like kind of like fabric because it's like really thin. It's one atom thick and it's really huge. And then it's like it has a gash on it because I've run an ion. And then you see how it moves after the impact. And it looks like if you would have a fabric and you would be like, you know, like the bed sheets. When you wave the bed sheets, it just it looks exactly like that. And it's really cool. And it's simulated, not like not as a continuum. It's just like atom by atom. But it behaves like a, it behaves exactly like a bed sheet or like real fabric. So it's really cool. Like,
so it's the wave moving into the...
Yeah, through the atoms.
The material, yeah.
So, I mean, and you see clearly, I mean, continuum and atoms is the same thing. Like, I mean, it's just when you bunch a lot of atoms, they behave exactly like...
Yeah, because they are anyway connected to each other. So, exactly. I mean, they're bonded to each other, yeah. Yeah. Well, you actually you visualize the fact that the particle and waves can be the same thing, and you actually see it in with spheres.
Mm. Particles and waves. Yeah. Well. Yeah.
Yeah. It can be both. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I don't know if I mentioned these Taylor simulations are called molecular dynamics, where like you basically follow the each atom individually, and each atom applies a force on the neighboring atoms, and so they each of them like move according to the force that the other atoms have access on them on it. So kind of like realistic. Our code, is a Fortran, prehistoric. It was done outside of Finland, but then I mean in the 90s he was brought to my lab, and then ever since has been developed in my lab. So pretty much is ours nowadays. But actually, no, no, go. Yes, this is actually, I think, a problem normally that people don't take seriously when they make a code. Maybe don't, often groups, they don't put enough resources for keeping the code in good shape.
They do it for themselves, and then they know how to use it, and then...
Kind of, yes, but yeah. Then no one else can... To learn how to the code works, you need to really... I mean, you have to be in touch with the person who developed it, otherwise it's impossible.
Yeah.
You is. Yeah, I understand.
Also because yes. You might forget yourself what you did, and then it's... It's a mess if you go through that a year later and it's like, what?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a fucking useless person.
Yes, I know that feeling.
Write this code like a human being.
I pretty much have it every day.
Welcome to my life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, sometimes you're past you is pretty cool when you actually put good notes in your code and you're like, oh yes, past me was a genius. The code is shit, but at least I know why. Yeah, exactly. Have fun.
But I mean, the code we use is quite funny because it's hard-coded everywhere and full of go-tos.
Nice.
Well, I mean, for those of you who are listening, if there's anyone who is listening, which I doubt, but anyway.
Yeah, there is always 10 people that listen to this, but I don't really think anybody gets to the end.
I don't understand why. But go-to is one of these practices in computing, in programming, which the most hated ones, maybe, which someone can come up with. It was from the old times when the computers were really slow and... the way the computer worked, you tell the computer, when you get here, if this go back to this line, and which means that basically the you don't know exactly to read the code, you have to all the time like go up and down in the code, and it's really difficult to know which part of the code is being executed first or last. And it can be really prone to really bad errors where like you don't really notice what your code will do because it's written in such a way that the computer jumps all the time from one line to another one. And it's for the human brain, it's really difficult to visualize.
Yeah, because it jumps directly to that one line. And if you put other lines, then the number of that line is different and it jumps to the wrong place or what?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you can have loops.
Spaghetti code.
So the thing is, like a normal code, it's you can think of it as a diagram. You know, like you always go from top down, down, down. Yeah, well, yeah. I was just thinking schematics because sometimes the code has, let's say, bifurcations or, you know, it splits. Can either happen this or this, so on. But nowadays in modern code, you separate. Whenever there's a split, you put in two separate places in your code what happens in each of these splits, which means that you know that once you are in this split, you are in this part of the code and you're not in the other one. And then once the code, the split is done and everything continues through a sequential way, so somehow like a part of the code that will always be executed after that part, no matter which of both ways you take, then it's somehow you can always know that whatever is lower in the code happens after what is before it. If you...
Nice. Yeah, so it's completely horrible.
Yes.
But is it also for the computer when it goes through the code, it's actually much, much less efficient?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't know, but I guess this if, the way the if works is pretty much like, I don't know, but I guess it's quite similar to the go to, just that it's just where you put the...
Yeah, okay.
Because at the end of the day, the code when you write is just a text, but then that's transferred into orders for the computer.
Yeah, the instruction, then they are the same. Yeah,
true. Yeah, basically. So, I mean, it's just a matter of...
Yeah, still used. And when is the code, it's hard-coded, then what do you do? Do you rewrite it or just leave with that?
No, these kind of codes are really big.
Yeah, exactly. You cannot really do anything.
You just live with it.
Yeah.
But it's really funny, like you find, this example simulation code, which is not really well taken care of. And then you find everywhere, like thing commented, and they're like, careful, warning, no, this doesn't work. If it doesn't work, why is it even here?
That's the good way. Yeah.
Yes.
That is the way of mathematics. You never use number, you use X, Y, Z.
Yeah, so much better.
Yeah.
Well, it's exactly the same concept. Make something general so you don't prove it for this number, but you prove it the function can be used for whatever situation. yeah. But now they are starting, they have put it in GitHub. But before, I don't know which. There was someone in charge for pushing the to the main repository to push in the updated versions.
So there is your code. You basically update it, and then you put it somewhere, and then everybody can access the last version of your code.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people who's using the same code. So each person has a bit of a forked version of their own. But if you want to pass this changes to the main code version, then you would give it to the person who is in charge of passing them.
Ah, okay.
Who like put it on? Who made the modifications? That was that way before, but I don't know. Like I have personally my own version. I will have to push it at some point because I changed some stuff that is useful for other people. But now it's in Git. But when I started, it was not in Git. We had our own. I think SVN. I don't know. Yeah, so I have no idea. I was planning on starting using GitHub, to upload my codes to GitHub, but then the thing that you have to pay for having them private, and yeah,
And we go back to the reason why Johanna has its own server now. Yeah. So, Enrique, you could pay Johanna to get it.
I'll push. Can I push them like encrypted? I don't trust you, actually.
Okay.
So, do you use SSH or how do you access the stuff?
Okay, you watched the videos on the internet.
So, but anyway, you have already built it, isn't it? I didn't. I remember like last time you were on the process.
Functioning webcam.
So now you can also organize tournaments in you can server at home and we can make like LAN.
Yeah, is it powerful enough to run a game server? Yeah, I'm not sure also. Depends on the game, I guess. No, it doesn't run, but it run all the calculation of like interaction between players and then sends to every player depending on the tick rate, if it's 60 hertz per player, if depending on how many players. I mean, if it's Rocket League, it's 6 players. But I absolutely have no idea how that works. Yeah, it would be really nice actually to know someone to, if you know someone that does like online or server coding stuff for games, you know where to ask.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah,
but yeah, but Johanna, you are studying to do computer simulations. What is the real shit? So it's basically what is the real topic? Okay, but it's mostly like it's a physics based. Or you just learn the method to do stuff that you can do then whatever else. Okay. Okay. Okay.
Also, I think, I don't know, at least from my point of view also, it is quite, even for people, physics, well, I guess it depends on the person. I like maths, but I find really challenging. I mean, I like maths from the point of view, maybe to understand how, like, especially when applied to physics, to how does the basically theory work and so on. But I find quite challenging solving math problems of math courses given by mathematicians instead of physicists, because at least the way they teach in the university for physicists, when you have to do some, even in the math courses, normally you have to calculate things. So it's like pretty much really straightforward way of doing things that you know what you want to get, and you more or less know what you have to do. You just have to, there's a method or however. I feel like in maths, normally it's like prove that this is like this, and it's not like prove it in a really simple way. Normally you have to, from my point of view, it's like really always illogical way. Like you go around the problem and use this theorem and this and this, and then at the end you get to the point. But from the education I got as a physicist, it's a completely different approach. So it really, I find it really difficult to take courses meant for mathematicians. Like it's, I mean, I might understand the theory, but then when I have to solve the problem, I'm like completely like lost for some reason.
Yeah, but it's really more like you don't do the mathematics to get a solution. You just want to know the way to do it. And if you're a physicist, you care about the solution much less of the way to do it. And if you're an engineer, you only care about the results, and someone else can do the in between work, basically. Yeah, you have to get to the results. Yeah, how you get it, that's more what the mathematician wants to know.
No, actually, mathematicians, they don't tell you normally how you get it. I mean, they tell you, does it exist?
Okay.
Which, I mean, from the physicist point of view, you never ask this question. It's like, of course it exists. Why not?
Yeah.
I mean, I was like, oh, whatever. I'll just keep going forward and try with my calculations until I get some. Make a new one.
Yeah, make new mathematics for me.
Well, sometimes some physicists, they are actually good as mathematicians. They're not like dumbasses as us, and then they actually come up with their own maths themselves. So,
yeah.
For example, Newton. Yeah, for example, I don't know, for those of you who don't know, like Newton, the guy of the apple and who discovered gravity, he basically, at that time, I mean, he discovered it really long time ago, and that time maths were really, really underdeveloped. So there was not such a thing as differential equation, which means like you could not express basically, you didn't have the tools for describing the motion of objects in a, like the equations for describing the motion of objects easily. I don't know how to explain. Yeah, actually, yeah, basically, if you know, for example, that at those times, if you would know the velocity of an object, you wouldn't know, and you know how is the velocity through time, but you could not calculate which is the position that it will have at the end. I mean, you could not trace back. And this Isaac Newton was the first guy who, well, there were two guys at the same time, he and Leibniz, and they were both came up with the differential equations, which, yes, allow for this kind of describing the evolution of things with, I don't know.
Yes, that it's yes.
With time, yeah. Or in space, I don't know how to explain.
Yes, yeah, the evolution of
small changes. it's so difficult to explain. I don't know.
It's how a function evolves or changes in respect to a certain variable in the function, basically.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it's how is the speed changing while the time is also changing? Basically, of a car, like if you accelerate, you're changing your speed over time.
Yeah, exactly.
And, yeah, you want to know how is the velocity changing with time. And you could not basically do it without the differential equation. There was no way to write down in a mathematics form that velocity was changing over time when time also affects the velocity, basically. But hey, we are freestyling the things. People look that they know everything because they check before. We don't, so...
Yeah, first.
Well, yeah, it's what they were not even like single field.
They were philosophers. They were everywhere.
Yeah, you would be like you are a physicist, but that maybe you are a chemist, and then you discover a new something, and then you are also a physicist because then you get the physics. But nowadays we are going so deep that you cannot do it anymore. Like maybe you can do it in certain fields. When it's kind of not that deep and you're a chemist, of course, you can do physics stuff, but you cannot do the top edge of every field if you don't really have hardcore knowledge in that one field. Yeah. It might be that you are a physicist, you discover some really cool things, but you don't know enough mathematics to do it because it's too much.
Yeah, I mean, no, I think it's this we're talking about, I mean, applies to almost everything. Like nowadays, in the past, people were like plowing the field and like planting stuff. And then 1% or 2% of population, well, I mean, maybe 5% of population were nobles. And then among those nobles, really exclusive club of them would be spending their time for fun, for science.
Yeah.
And then these people... I mean, science at the time was not such a developed field, and they pretty much did whatever they could, and they discussed among themselves, and it was still an amount of information that I think they could, it was sort of handable for them. But nowadays, each field has so many developments through centuries of people dedicating their whole lives to them, that if you really want to understand deeply the field, you have to just, I mean, really spend all your time on it, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's basically, yeah, you have to focus. Yeah. Oh, you prepare your podcast before and you look like you know everything. But hey, we don't cheat, so we can only speak about things we know. And that's why it's always so messy. Nah, if you are alone, you just speak all the time about the one thing, you know. But hey, about something that you know for sure, I saw this screenshot that you posted yesterday. That screenshot. So we are now running away from the science and going to the entertainment fun part. Okay, wait. Rocket League, it's playing football with cars that fly.
What can be more epic than that?
Yes. So if you don't know what Rocket League is, look now. Rocket League, football, cars, flying, epic stuff. And the game is fun. Just take it, play with your friends. And you start playing, you get the pizza, you keep playing, and then it's 4 o'clock.
In the morning.
In the morning, yeah, of course. And then you have to go home. Yeah, so that's like a level that I don't play Rocket League very much, but I play once in a while, and that's kind of okay. Yeah, if you know what you're doing and you're decent, it's okay. Like, and you don't need to grind for it, basically.
That long? Is it that long?
Is it like a few weeks that you would get call, or?
No, because I remember, you know, your friend Giovanni, I remember when you told me that Taiko was gold.
That was long ago, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
That you were consistently in the gold. And you are the only one in the team that done
that. Yes, he's the star.
Who's the alpha now?
Johanna is the alpha, obviously.
Yes. But they still gold. Yeah, it's not that easy.
We take it as a team accomplishment.
Well, now, Johanna, you have to carry them to your level.
Yes. You're our only hope, Johanna. You're our only hope. We're hopeless otherwise. Don't downplay yourself.
Yeah, of course. I mean, if you play in a team, there is someone that maybe makes more goals, but that doesn't mean that the other one that didn't make the goals didn't do anything. Like,
yeah, exactly. It's.
I mean, if it's me, it's worse. But if it's three good in the team, then.
But now that we're speaking about Rocket League, I mean, for those of you who either have played Rocket League or maybe are considering at some point, well, I would spend hours speaking about Rocket League because it would be hard for me to think about a more fun game than Rocket League. I mean, I guess it's my all-time favorite. But anyway, now I think it's the first video game, or I don't know, I've never heard of any other video game which has done this, but they are like next week releasing an update where they provide a tournament system. So within the game, you can organize tournaments either for your friends or, let's say, for playing with people you don't know or whatsoever. But everything can be done within the game. So you can organize tournaments with normally, for example, in Europe, we are around, like, let's say, 200,000 players at the same time. So, I mean, you can organize a tournament and then people, if you allow for, you can, of course, put different, let's say, filters based on the quality of the players so that they are basically approximately of the same rank. Quality level, let's say skill level than yours or whatsoever, and then anyone can join if you want so, or otherwise you can just do it for friends for some close group of people. But I think
basically the game makes the whole tournament automatically.
Exactly, you don't have to do anything else. You just like either set it open for people to join or invite the people personally, and
okay,
you're ready to play. I'm
really curious to try this because. I mean, it's just an evening. You're like, yeah, okay, if we play some, let's play in this tournament, and then you just go there and do the stuff.
Because one thing is to play, you know, normally, I mean, you of course always want to win. But when it's a tournament, you have extra motivation because, you know, if you lose, you're out. And if you win, you go to the next round, and, you know, it will be only tougher there. But it's like pushing.
Even if you don't win anything, it's.
Yeah, but it's just.
Yeah, that's true.
For those who don't know, Brazil.
Well, I guess most of the people know.
You should know. Well, I don't know, like because in a game where you cannot make goals, it doesn't make sense to say it, is it?
Yeah.
I've heard a lot of times in Rocket League, but I don't know if in Call of Duty you would use it or. Anyway, Brazil to do a Brazil is when you do one to some. You win by 7-1. Let's say other team.
And maybe people know where it come from. It has to do with Germany and Brazil.
Yeah, in the World Championship in football. Yes. That was pretty awesome. Yes.
Yeah, of course, 7-1 is so much better than 7-0. the last second. Yeah.
And I would say it's also a really momentum driven game that somehow when, let's say, it's really psychological, I would say, whenever you're feeling good and you're feeling like you're playing good and you're winning, you're more likely to keep it going. But as soon as the other team starts to get momentum, they might stomp over you. Like, it's because whoever applies the pressure, whoever it's aggressive, then like the other team might crumble under the pressure really easily. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and then maybe they are like, you relax a bit, it's like, yeah, 3-0, easy. And then they make a goal, it's like, yeah, it's okay, we still have two goals more. And then it's 2-3-2, oh shit.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they get the momentum, and then you're fucked. And it's 4-3 at the last second.
So it's, I think these not so, depends on the sport. Some sports is quite common also, not only esports, but let's say, I would say basketball is quite like that, that you hardly ever can say that a basketball game is over unless it's already quite you're already in the fourth quarter. But I mean, in the first, second, or even in the middle of the third quarter, anything can happen. Like, and it's really momentum also. The momentum of the team is really important also. Like, after, normally after the break, kind of the game, like kind of break whatsoever, then often, like, if someone is on top, then it reverses because whoever comes with more energy out of locker room.
Yeah, it's a kind of very but similar football, to a sport kind like of. That.
Yeah.
Yeah, when Germany is playing, then you might get 7 goals.
At least if you're in Brazil, yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, the game is 5 minutes long, but you could, if you're really pumped up or if you're lucky, or if you really like are focused, or the other team somehow it's like a bit low in moral because of the last goal you have made, you can easily make 4 goals in 1 minute, or even 3 in like half minute or something like that. Like, easily. This is not like something would happen like only once every, 100 matches or something like that. This could perfectly happen like one every 5 matches or 10, yeah. That suddenly, like, so many goals come all at once. Yeah, so. Now that you spoke about it, about the physics of the game, like, how do you already address this in any podcast earlier?
About physics in games.
Games physics, yeah.
Well, we spoke about in the beta version of the podcast in a very, very badly way. So we are going to have maybe one time that we're going to try
But anyway, what's your opinion on Rocket League's physics?
Well, I don't think it's any real physics. It's made on purpose not to be correct.
Yeah, okay. So. I don't know. As a physicist, it's difficult to accept that a game has wrong physics.
But it's a game. I mean, it's fucking cars that fly.
You can change like the strength that in which, like, the, let's say, how much the elasticity or like the how much the ball reflects and all this stuff, but the angles should at least be right.
Well, I guess those are.
Sometimes I feel somehow like it goes a bit goes a bit banana, like the shot when you hit it with certain part of the
and also, I mean, the game doesn't need the physics to be like such a high quality as long as it's consistent how it goes and more or less goes where you expect it to go.
Yeah,
that would be actually interesting. Maybe another time we can check some of these things better and then make an episode about physics in video game and how it's like a realistic physics for the gameplay, completely fucked up physics, and see example of that. Because again, it's already 1 hour that we are going and we are getting into the completely like what talks. So yeah, maybe we close it down and continue the next time for something.
Yes.
Something different. And next time, let me check, because we might have actually the next time it's gonna be speaking about balancing video games and balancing maybe in general in games if we get there to board games. And we might have some guests. Let's see. Maybe Enrique will join again. Let's see how that goes. But the next one is going to be about maybe video games and balancing video games. So let's see. For now, we can close this one and see you the next time.
See you in Platinum.
Oh, yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye.